We'll keep this college football theme rolling right along. The man who's got to have a job where it starts with an A. I don't know what he'll do after The Athletic. Maybe he'll work for Apple. Mitch Light is the college football editor for The Athletic. Previously,
you're on one today.
Athlon. And then he'll probably be at Apple someday after The Athletic. He is on the line with us. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good. Darren, I Apple's a great company. I'd probably make a lot of money there, but I don't think I have one skill that would help Apple at all. Like, the only thing I know is to, like, turn off my, you know, restart, shut off my computer and when things don't work. So, but, you know.
Well, how about Applebee's? How about Applebee's? He'll be at Applebee's after The Athletic. Can you do that?
Say, you know, they're not a sponsor of yours, are they? So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say anything. But, no. Thanks, Darren.
So we just got off the phone with Derek Mason, and he says he's got the quarterback race down to two. Where do you think this is going at Texas A&M?
I think Ken Fields is going to be a starter. I don't know that. Nobody really knows except those in the program. I mean, this year more than ever, you know, practices are closed. You know, in the past, I went to practice and, you know, saw some things. But this year, really don't know. I've talked to a few people, and I think Ken Seals has the edge. I was told a couple weeks ago that if it wasn't Ken Seals, it would be Danny Clark, the who's got an interesting story. In fact, I was just on the phone with Ari Wasserman, who's our national recruiting writer at The Athletic, who covered Ohio State for years. Danny Clark was a kid from Columbus who committed to Urban Meyer as a freshman, was just a phenom and really highly rated, and then I don't think developed quite like they thought he would throughout his high school career. And, you know, as recruiting goes, they don't necessarily tell you you don't have a scholarship, but they make it clear that you're probably not going to play there. So he was kind of squeezed out of that recruiting class, and ended up, that was the year they took Tate Martell, who's now transferred to Miami, who just left Miami. And Danny Clark went, signed to Kentucky, did not play. I think he was there at Kentucky for 2 years or left in the middle of his second year, went to junior college, and now is at Vanderbilt. So a little backstory on Clark. Don't know if he'll play, but my guess is Ken Fields would be one and Clark would be two. With Mike Wright, the freshman, the other true freshman, maybe in some packages to run the ball. I think he's more of an athlete right now, not as refined as a passer.
Did you watch any of Miami and Louisville Saturday night on primetime?
I watched some. In fact, you know, my son had two baseball games. With my new job responsibilities, I'm going to be tied to the TV watching games more than even usual, like all day. So that was like my last Saturday before the SEC. So I actually was gone a lot of the day. I got home in the second half. But I saw Miami play UAB, so I have seen a decent amount of Miami this year.
He was playing on Saturday night? Playing night games?
It's big time.
My goodness.
Had games at 1 and 5 in Franklin. And this week, which I will not be able to go, sorry, Gabe, if you're listening, which I'm sure he's not, play at 5 and 7 o'clock. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. The big
is
boys.
Isn't the gap the worst? The big, you know, long gap in between games? Willie definitely can talk about this. The worst is just the big gaps in between.
You're just committed to being at the field for like 9 straight hours.
Yep, that's exactly right. What of the two early games, the two 11 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday, Florida at Ole Miss, Kentucky at Auburn? The Florida Ole Miss game is on ESPN. Kentucky Auburn's on SEC Network. Which one intrigues you the most and why?
Both. I think, you know, the Kentucky Auburn games get a lot of buzz. I think there's a lot of people out there that think, hey, Kentucky, you know, no one's really talking about them. Could they finish third in the East? Could they do better? And I think Kentucky's fascinating. We've talked a lot over the years. I think it was after the 2018 season we'd find out if Mark Stoops really had a good breakthrough season and then regress or built himself a program. And I think what we learned last year is that he built himself a program, even with all the injuries at quarterback, how they were still solid last year, you know, a really good team. So I think there's people who believe that, hey, they've kind of arrived. Not arrived as an SEC East contender, but they've arrived as a program that every year is going to be in that 6-8 win range. And I think the people are looking at that as a potential upset, as am I. I think there's still some quarterback issues there. Terry Wilson will be the quarterback. They're still waiting for word on Joey Gatewood. whether or not he will be cleared. Last I'd heard, they did not know. So I think there's definitely a lot of intrigue there. I think Florida is a team that I'm picking to win the East, even though Georgia has a better overall roster. Big Dan Mullen fan. I think Kyle Trask can have Kyle Trask's an interesting guy. He had the breakthrough game against Kentucky last year, had a really nice season. He's really productive. Dan Mullen always has good quarterbacks, and I don't know how much people subscribe or believe in Pro Football Focus, but really did not. Pro Football Focus's rankings, I think they had him like 48th nationally among quarterbacks last year. A lot of the advanced stats did not favor Kyle Trask. So I'm interested to see, now that he has the job on a full-time basis, what kind of season he'll have. I think Ole Miss, there's a lot of interest there with Lane Kiffin. I love watching them play last year with John Rhys Plumlee and Matt Corral at quarterback. They've got great depth at running back. I don't know how many playmakers they have at wide receiver there. So, in fact, I was having this conversation earlier. Someone asked me, thought that the 13.5 point line was a little too low with Florida favored at Oxford, but I don't think so. I think Lane Kiffin is going to have a really good offense this year.
I see it's now up over 2 touchdowns, 14.5 now. Did you see Coach O on 60 Minutes on Sunday?
I did not. I was watching the NFL game right before that. I meant to watch it, and one of those things, you just got busy doing something. But I saw people tweeting about it, and I saw the clip with his mom, who's maybe the best accent ever there. So I did not see the segment, though.
Okay. With that being said, then, what do you make of their game hosting Mike Leach and Mississippi State coming to town? What do you make of that game, the primetime?
Yeah, I like LSU. I'm not as high as LSU. I think, I don't have in front of me what their AP ranking is. I think there's an inevitable step back there. You lose so much talent on both sides of the ball. You go from one of the best teams in the history of the sport. You lose two key coaches. And I just don't think there's any way you're as good. I don't care who you are. Now, they've got good talent. They've had some key guys opt out. Mississippi State's an intriguing team with Mike Leach coming in. KJ Costello, the Stanford quarterback. How's that for a life move from Palo Alto, California, to Starkville, Mississippi? But he's probably going to have a productive season there. So I like LSU at home. But there's an interesting thing about LSU that I hadn't really thought about too much. And at The Athletic, our LSU writer had a good story about this, that Coach O does not seem to be upset that Dave Aranda's gone. He got the job under kind of strange circumstances where no one really thought he was going to get it or deserved it. Part of his pitch was, I'm going to be the CEO. We've got these big-time coordinators. We're going to keep Dave Aranda. We're going to pay him $2 or $3 million, whatever it is. We're going to bring Joe Brady in. We're going to have all these big-time assistants. Well, I don't think that Ed Orgeron ever necessarily saw eye-to-eye with Aranda on a lot of things, but he had to lean on him because that was part of his pitch to get the job. And their defensive numbers weren't great last year. Now, a lot of that could be because of the offense. And, when you're so good on offense, there's a lot of garbage time defensive numbers there. But Coach O has said some things with Bo Pelini as the coordinator this preseason. He's like, this is the best our defense has looked in years. We're going to attack more and stuff. So there's a lot of hey, I'm going to get this done without Dave Aranda. I'm going to get this done without Joe Brady. So that's something to watch for this year.
Talking to Mitch Light, he is one of the college football editors at The Athletic. Mitch, Kellen Mond has now put in his time as a starter in this league. Where do you rate him? If the reference point is, frontline starter, SEC, maybe just shy of a Heisman Trophy kind of candidate, what's his ceiling this year for Texas A&M?
I think it's pretty high. It's not a great year on paper for quarterbacks in the SEC, just a lot of turnover. I know Kyle Trask's got a lot of preseason first team recognition, and Mond has too. So I think he's playing for a coach in Jimbo Fisher who always, seemingly gets good quarterback play there. He's been in the system. Like you said, he's been around. Now they don't have they've had some injuries. They've had some opt-outs at wide receiver. One of their top tight ends got hurt. So I think he is a solid top 3 or 4 quarterback in the SEC. You kind of phrased it right, Willie. Unless they have a special season, he's not going to be a guy. I don't think there's going to be any Heisman Trophy discussions, but I think I would definitely put him in the top 2 or 3, 4 in the SEC.
Every team, we just got done talking to Derek Mason. They've got some guys missing. He's vague, as he should be. He said, listen, 2020, things can turn. I'm waiting on the results of some tests. He's probably not alone. But it's clear that they're probably not going to have everybody they thought they were going to have. We've been chronicling what's happening at Tennessee. Is there any sense you have, Mitch, of who's been affected the most, you know, in terms of key players that won't be out there on SEC rosters? Or can we have a feel for that yet?
Well, because since we don't have all the data, it's hard to say that. And I've kind of said this to people. You know, I know Vanderbilt's off the radar nationally because expectations are low. But from what I read and look around, you could argue that no team has been hit harder than Vanderbilt because of the concentration at one position, and that being the offensive line. You had an offensive line that was going to be questionable to begin with, and then you lose several potential starters. And that could kind of, you know, hurt any chances you have of having an improved offense with a new coordinator coming in. So I no doubt I think Vanderbilt's been hurt. A lot of, you know, aside from the opt-outs, Devin Cochran, who was a three-year starter at left tackle, I don't really know what happened in this situation. He left his grad transfer. He's from Atlanta to go to Georgia Tech. And then just about 2 months ago, I just saw on Twitter, Devin Cochran will not play at Georgia Tech this year. And I didn't really read anything about it. So he's not at Georgia Tech. I don't think he's playing anywhere. But that's another guy who would have been plugged in there. So I think it's hurt Vanderbilt a lot. And, you know, LSU, no doubt, they got Sheldon back, their defensive lineman. But, you know, losing Jamar Chase, they lost some top-level guys there. If the Pac-12 comes back, Oregon lost two guys in the secondary, and Washington lost its best defensive lineman. So there's been few programs are unscathed, but then you look at someone like Alabama, and I don't know if they've had any opt-outs. So it's some, you know, it's the times we live in. And but like as you said, Willie, we're not going to know week to week. You know, it could be in 2 weeks someone's entire offensive line could be wiped out, and if that's the case, then we're not going to have a game.
And you would hope that over time, after the initial adaptation, whatever term you want to use, it was going to be the case on all college campuses. There was going to be an initial wave. Hopefully you adapt, you change your approach, and the case level goes down. You know, hope this becomes less of a problem as the season progresses and not more, but all things are possible. So with that being said, you know, we may not know sometimes. Some coaches aren't going to reveal what might be going on behind the scenes. So let's put all that aside. Oh, go ahead, Mitch.
Well, here's a scenario that I know some coaches have kind of, you know, talked about privately. Everyone's thankful for college football now. Players didn't think they'd have it. They're all fired up. What happens to some programs that get off to an 0-4 start or 1-4 start? All that discipline, all those guys. So maybe that guy on a Thursday night is going to be a little more willing to leave his football bubble and go out to eat or go to a gathering and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the discipline, like my team's struggling for, you know, I don't need to be, you know. So that's a scenario that I know coaches are worried about. Can they, if the season's not going well, can they keep everyone engaged? Can they keep that discipline that they've had for the past month?
Let's take a look at South Carolina, Tennessee. What do you see there? That looks like a big swing game for both teams.
Yeah, it totally is. And games at South Carolina, South Carolina has some issues. You know, their program that I work with, our South Carolina writer, Josh Kendall, so I've learned, you know, I've always followed them, but I've learned a lot more about them in the past, you know, 2-3 months. And they've got some serious holes. Now, the story of preseason camp was Colin Hill, the grad transfer from Colorado State, beating out Ryan Helinski, and Darren still owes me money, our Starbucks gift card from last year when Helinski did not start in the opener. I will not forget that, Darren. I know there's a pandemic. I will come find you when this is over, and I want my $25 gift card. But
was it agreed to, $25? Because Darren, I think, has some $25 gift cards, but it's to establishments that are no longer open. It's businesses
sure
that have closed over the last 5 to 10 years.
Maybe I should just get cash then. But back to South Carolina, they are lacking some proven playmakers at wide receiver. Jalen Brooks, a transfer from Division II Wingate, just came down this morning that he was not ruled eligible, and they're going to appeal that. He was going to start at wide receiver. They really are lacking. Shy Smith is their only proven wide receiver. They have issues at left tackle. They have an or on three potential guys at left tackle. They were hoping to shore that up. I think they have some issues on the offensive line there. Their best running back, a true freshman, Marshawn Lloyd, a four-star kid from Maryland, tore his ACL the second day of practice this year. So they don't really have a difference maker at wide receiver. Now, I think they'll be better coached on offense with Mike Bobo coming in as the offensive coordinator, the former Colorado State head coach, and obviously former Georgia quarterback. in coordinator. And defensively, they're good on the defensive line. They're pretty good in the secondary. I think Tennessee's the more talented team, but, you know, the game's at South Carolina. I know we'll figure out how much crowds, small crowds matter this year, but I think this is a game that Tennessee can and maybe should win.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. He's one of their college football editors. I want to go outside the SEC. I know Notre Dame has canceled some practices, got to pay attention to what's going on with that. But through two games as a member of the ACC, do you view Notre Dame as a potential college football playoff contender right now?
Not yet. I don't think, Chase, you know, obviously with the Big Ten coming back, that's going to bring some more teams into the mix there. They played two games at home. I think it was the South Florida game. I think that was at home, yeah. I saw the Duke game. They were pretty good in that game, not great. That freshman running back, and he's a sophomore, Kyren Williams, has looked really good. They lost, you know, their best wide receiver, Claypool, who's done some good things, I think, for the Steelers already, and then Cole Clement, the tight end. I don't think they have the type of playmakers, the dynamic guys at wide receiver, at least yet, that can really stretch and scare a good defensive team. And I think the ACC is probably better than maybe we thought. North Carolina has looked good so far. We've already talked a little bit about Miami. So I think they're a solid team, but they played two home games. You know, Duke lost at home to Boston College, so that's not like, you know, that was a great win, and South Florida has not been very good. So I'm not really, you know, buying Notre Dame right now.
You brought up North Carolina. They've been a team, and I know their game last week got canceled, but watching them and their comeback in week one and what Mack Brown has built over the past year, I'm kind of a believer in them too.
Yeah, and it starts with the quarterback there. You know, that shows you how important the getting it right at that position is. It started with Sam Howell, and Mack Brown came in, and he was a North Carolina kid, and it's Sam Howell was committed to Florida State. He flipped him, got him there, and it just started with there. North Carolina is kind of one of those programs that's always had talent, you know, not elite talent, but that's never really been the big issue. So Mack Brown comes in, gets his quarterback, and then he's just started rolling. He's got a really good recruiting class this year. It's been a great year in the state of North Carolina, and they're doing very well in their own state. So they're kind of one of those sleeping giants a little bit in college football where I think in a few years we could look at, you know, Miami's obviously off to a good start, but the Coastal has been such a mess, so much balance with seven different champions in 7 years. I think in a few years, North Carolina might be, you know, emerge and say, hey, they're the team to beat every year in the Coastal.
We asked about some potential matchups in the SEC, but for one team going into this first week, what team should be worried the most?
In the SEC? You know, this is the cliched answer that I talked about, but probably Auburn. I'm going to go Florida. Because everyone's talking Kentucky, Auburn. I'm going to say Florida. I like Florida. I just think that, and I think that number's too high, and I like Ole Miss's running game. You know, they put up 250 yards running on Alabama last year. They didn't throw for much, and Florida's a very good defensive team. Got a good defensive line, some reinforcements there. But I wouldn't be shocked if Ole Miss plays really well and makes Florida sweat on Saturday.
He is Mitch Light. He's one of the college football editors at The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate it as always, and we will talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Take care.
College football, a big weekend with the SEC returning. We will come back, wrap up the show next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.